Maria.
Mr. Drax?
Well, I'd like to extend a special welcome to everyone here tonight. Thank you for attending the elected officials forum. And to start the meeting tonight, let's all stand and do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
At this time, we have a forum, City Commissioner, City of Boyne City. And I need to call for a roll call, please.
Gaylord?
Here.
Crunch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Sansom?
Here.
Town?
Here.
Quorum present.
Okay, do we have any other boards or commissions for the forum tonight that wishes to...
Ron, I think we have a part of the county commissioners have a forum here, too. So, we can do a roll call. Chris?
Here.
Chris is here. Bert is here. Rich is here. I'm here. Nobody else in order.
Todd?
Yeah, Wilson Township. We have Marilyn Healy, Terry Reinhardt, Jeff Hardison. I'm sorry, I couldn't see you. That was a problem.
We have one. Okay, anyone else? Okay, at this time, we're going to turn the meeting over to Robin Berry, who's representing the Michigan Township Association. Thank you for being with us and bearing the burden today.
Thanks for helping the way. Ladies and gentlemen, we thought we'd first start by going around the room and having you stand up and so you could see a face with a voice. And who you are, where you're from, and in what position you would hold. Because we're trying to build relationships, and the first step is getting a name, to know the face, with the voice. So let's see, what table can we pick on first? Todd, we're going to start with your table.
That's the one who's supervisor for Wilson Township, and the bad part is I'm also the assessor.
Mike Kutowski, I'm with Air North Networks. Was asked to come here and give you guys an update on broadband.
Martin Fields with Air North Networks. Excuse me.
Laura Sampson, Boyne City Commission.
Jeff Gaither, Boyne City Police Chief.
Derek Gaylor, Boyne City City Commissioner.
I'm looking forward to my first gathering to give an update on Ross and the
Ross Maxwell, Charlotte County Parks and Recreation Director. Don Schneider, Charlotte County Sheriff, and Derek is also my jail administrator.
Shawba County Commissioner, Representative District 2, which is Point City and Evangeline Council.
Bruce Vaughn, just a guest. Bruce Vaughn's right here.
Sarah Lucas, I'm a regional planning program manager at the Northwest Michigan Council.
Hi, everyone.
Amy
Doyle, assistant planner and administrator of Point City and principal planner for Evangeline Council.
Larry Sullivan, County Commissioner. Represent the city of Charlevoix and Charlevoix Township. And no, I do not. I am not the city clerk.
Bob Green of South Iron Township. I guess I would say I'm also a county planning commissioner.
Ron Grant, city commissioner, chair of the city of Boyne City. I'm Joel Evans, chair of the county commissioners. I represent District 4, which is East Jordan and South Iron Township.
I'm Rich Murphy, and I represent my name from Netherlands Township, so I'm not going to have a moving around with the area.
I'm Shepard, Charlotte County Coordinator and Community Resource Director.
Good evening, I'm Michael Kane, Boyne City City Manager.
My name's Don Hunter, I'm here as a guest of Mayor Brunch.
I'm Dean Dowell, Boyne City City Commissioner.
Jeff Argus there, Wilson Township Trustee.
Scott McCarthy, Planning Director, City of Boyne City, and the Planning and Zoning Administrator for Wilson Township.
Yeah.
Chris Younger, East Boardman City Administrator. I'm Hugh Conklin with the One City Main Street Program and the DDA.
Lynn Solnit, Norwood Township, I'm the treasurer.
Your advice, I'd be aligned, Township Trustee.
Holly Martin with the Charlevoix Conservation District, the Charlevoix County Recycling.
Frank Hamilton, Supervisor, Norwood Township.
David Bernice, Norwood Township.
Jen?
Jen Roderman, my Township Supervisor.
Brent Goodwin, Norwood Township Supervisor.
Phyllis Colton, Norwood Township Trustee.
Shelley Byrne, Norwood Township Treasurer.
Hi, Rob Strabel, City of Charlevoix, City Manager.
Yay! On your table are some goodies that were provided by three different companies. Two were insurance companies, and the third one does election supplies and equipment. I hit them up at the conference last month and said, could you get me some goodies to pass out at our upcoming meeting? So you have some more pens, pencils, calendars, and some laminated get-out-the-vote. Remind citizens, put them in your windows, you know, on your vehicle, and people need to get out and vote. We also have a sponsor, and I'm sure you want to say a couple things. Northwest Michigan Council of Governments bought dinner, so let's give them a round of applause.
Thank you. Again, my name is Sarah Lucas. I'm in the Regional Planning Department of the Northwest Michigan Council of Governments. And for those of you who haven't worked with us in the past or aren't familiar with us, we provide a variety of different services to local governments, townships, villages, cities. We have a few projects that we do annually on a region-wide basis, things like asset management, where we work with the state of Michigan to rate the quality of roads. But a lot of the work that we do is community-driven, people come in for requests and help with things like master plans, recreation plans, that kind of thing. Just where you need that extra help to get your plans going. We have a few big projects going on right now, and just a couple of them that I'd like to mention. How many of you have heard of the Regional Prosperity Initiative or the Regional Reinvention Initiative? A few of you. The governor is trying to align various state services by regions, and so they're, you know, redrawing a lot of the regional boundaries and trying to streamline services a little bit based on those boundaries. As part of that initiative, they've provided grant dollars for what they're calling regional prosperity plans, and then Northwest Michigan Council of Governments received some money to do some work under one of those grants. And so as part of that, we'll be working with communities and with consultants to do a number of studies. A few things that we have planned are seasonal population study, some land use, transportation, housing, and energy studies that we'll work with you on and make available to you. Another thing that you probably heard about as part of that grant is the Community Growth Grant Program, and that provides up to $10,000 on a competitive basis for communities that have smaller planning projects going on. In the past, they've been used for things like recreation or master plans or corridor plans, that kind of thing. So those are out there right now. If you have any things coming up that you could use some funding for, I could provide you some more information that we have on our website. So that's something that we've got coming up over the next couple months. And one more thing I'd like to mention is next week at the Edmond County Building, we are holding a presentation by a marketing consultant called Ladies USA. They're likely going to be helping us with what's called a target market analysis, which looks at housing demand in communities within a given county. So it will provide housing demand and projections for each village or city in the county, in Charlevoix County. And that is something that MISHDA, the Michigan State Housing Development Authority, is really pushing, and they're going to be tying that to a number of funding sources. So once that's completed, housing developments that are interested in that target market analysis might be eligible for funding. So next week, March 5th, at the Iowa County Building, it's at noon. We'll have lunch there. If you'd like to come, again, I'd be happy to provide more information, but we'd love to see you there. Have a good mix of people to find out about these studies that are coming up that we hope are going to be useful to you all. So thank you for inviting us tonight. We're pleased that we can help provide this lovely dinner. And again, if you have any questions about
it,
just let me know. Yeah, thank you.
Hi. I'd like to thank Sarah for helping and organizing helping purchase the dinner, but I have to introduce two additional members of my staff that's going to help make this all possible. Over in the corner there, you heard her voice earlier, Colleen Gold, our city clerk treasurer, Cindy Bright, and the person actually arranged for the meal and made the chili by herself, Barbara Manser, and our executive assistant, Barbara Brooks. I also saw one person here who had not introduced himself. Mark, do you want to introduce yourself?
Mark Benzing, City Commission, East Shore.
Yay! Yeah, the people that kind of sneak in on us. Now, if you noticed on your name tag, we have color coordinating, and there are color sheets on the table. We'd like you to pick up all your goodies, you know, so you don't lose them, and move to the table that has the color that's on your name tag. Now we have to get our little healthcare. It's a constantly moving target. Does anybody have updates of things that they've discovered, issues they've heard about? It's still evolving. Anybody have anything we need to add?
Yeah, you can't keep your healthcare plan.
At MTA conference, they said they're still working on defining how we're going to have to deal with our volunteer fire departments. They gave it a name, but then they didn't define what that was going to mean. So we've got to be keeping records of how many real hours our volunteers spend, so they can't come back and tell us, oh, that's a full-time employee for county FTEs. And yeah, even us small people need to be keeping track of that. So if they come to a meeting, we need in our records how long that meeting lasted. If they go on a fire run, how long did it last? So that we've got records that if down the road they say, verify that it's not a full-time employee, even though it's a volunteer fire department. They were suggesting that possibly elected board members need to keep accurate records of how many hours outside of meetings that they spend working on city or township work. Because again, they may come back and say, we think the township trustees are full-time employees. Mike.
Yeah, that was something we really struggled with as we were learning how to operate under the Affordable Care Act. Normally we have about 20 or so employees that have health care coverage, but the benefits that we've had in the past. But as we went through the process and talked to various carriers trying to get different quotes, one of the big questions they asked was, were you a large or a small employer? Well, everybody kept thinking that we were a small employer, and we really got down to the nitty-gritty of it. And City Price, our clerk treasurer, basically went through all the personnel records that we had, looked at all the hours for our on-call firefighters, our on-call EMS responders, including our city commissioners. And once you add all those totals together, we ended up with about
51 to 55.
Or kept jumping around the number of employees. And there's different periods of the years you can look at to see if you qualify, but that makes a huge difference. So make sure you're consulting with somebody that really knows how to work yourself through that process. We've got some extensions to go back for a couple of years. 2015, we're trying to figure out what these 2016 delays have to do with it. But it's really up in the air, and you really have to make sure you're talking to somebody that can guide you through the process so you don't inadvertently make a mistake.
And that will be our MTA chapter meeting on April 28th. We have an insurance person that's going to come in and kind of give us more background. What records do they anticipate we need to be keeping? What documentation? Because it's a moving target right now.
A lot of the experts right now don't even know what's going on. They're learning it as they go.
So, Blair.
I understood that the federal government ruled that volunteer firefighters were not.
They didn't define it yet. At the MTA meeting, they did not define what they're calling.
3 weeks ago, NACO has done, National Association of Counties, it sent out a release that stated that the.
This is. Last month at State MTA conference, they said it isn't clearly defined of what volunteers and all that kind of stuff.
Hey, Robin?
Yes.
Didn't you have, or what? No, that was liability insurance you were talking about, wasn't it? So you're bringing that up a little bit. Never mind.
All right. Our next one, water quality. How many of you attended the watershed dinner that was out at the fish restaurant? Anybody want to share how nice that was?
I'll put them on the spot.
It was a really nice detailed update of what's going on with the Lake Charlevoix watershed and quick report outs from different groups that are working on projects involving invasive species and quality testing and fish populations and all kinds of things. We're going to keep in mind that our high quality of water is one of our most treasured resources here. And that there are a lot of people that are working on it. And what I've discovered going to the tip of the mid Little Traverse Bay watershed meetings, because Walloon is now annexed as part of the Bay watershed plan that they realized the two were together, is that there are so many little projects happening in northern Michigan that are all about quality of water and fish and erosion control and like the bridges that they redone in their river and how they're coordinating getting ramps. In our township, they did culverts. Where's the road commission tonight? The culvert on Holmes Road was a project that was coordinated through that. So if you can get somebody to pick one thing and get them to get informed on those kinds of topics and then come back and educate the rest of your board or the commission, that's a great thing. Our next topic,
Robin, before you keep on that,
yeah.
Some of the members here may recall, wasn't that long ago, a year, year and a half ago, that the common ordinance that was being circulated throughout the county with all the townships and the cities, the three cities at that time opted out.
The stormwater.
Correct. With the stormwater well and water quality on it. Our concern was with regard to having not one size fits all. And things in the cities are a little bit different, and maybe we should administer our own. Just let everybody here know that the mid-watershed has requested that the cities get together and meet with them to see where any next steps there are going to be on that. So that'll probably be coming up in a few months. I don't know. We'll try to set up a meeting next month or two. So there may be some discussion on that.
So we are making cooperatively a lot of progress. The big thing is putting our heads together and saying, what is the solution that we can do most effectively and efficiently? Next area was communications. Have we found in the last year that we've been calling each other more or cooperating and communicating and sharing information more between jurisdictions? Done.
When I speak to communication tonight, and I hope the rest of the first responders chime in, like the chiefs, the EMS, the fire. Over the past year, we have moved into the narrowband radio system, and it has caused us a lot of problems. Initially, it cost us a lot of money to go to the narrowband system, which is mandated by the feds for us to do. And we continue to have problems, whether it's in East Jordan, in Charlevoix, Norwood Township, out in our far east townships as well, and we continue, we're working through those, but it's come with a large price tag, which the commissioners are well aware of. But again, I invite the rest of my first responders to chime in about the problems that we're having with communications.
The voice has been taken to our regional 911.
Yes, I mean they're aware of it, okay, and they're looking at that, putting up additional towers. But again, those towers come at a very large price. But it's a matter of safety for our citizens of our townships and cities. And we're working hard towards that end. So it's a collective effort between the commissioners supporting those dollars. To support those new towers that will bring us up to a little bit better. Help me out, guys. The optimum is, at this point, is 95% coverage, which means, help me out, Mike, 90% of the time, 90%.
It's 90% optimum because you want 95% of the coverage 95% of the time. So
right.
It comes out, it averages out to 90% coverage is what it is. Thanks to Mike's on that board at 911 with us, and Rob sat in at the last meeting. I think the original quote that we had for a tower they were going to erect in Marion Township, which actually didn't serve the purpose they were targeting, and actually had a detrimental effect on Norwood's community. And I think the quote was 462. And so we made him go back to the drawing board, dug our heels in, and made him reevaluate the system. Spent a little bit of money in consulting, but we ended up coming up with a solution. We believe it was going to cost around $300,000. So we saved $160,000, and we're going to end up with better coverage than we would have got with the $462,000 purchase that was proposed, not including the effect that we had on Norwood, because that would have caused them to have to put up another tower at some point in time to correct that down the road. So it's a lot of give and take trying to sort that whole mess out. But the one good news is working with the city of Charlevoix, it looks like we're going to be able to use existing structure as opposed to creating new. So as far as the landscape and all that goes, we're not adding anything out there. We're not putting a, new tower up. We're going to utilize what's already existing, what's already there in an effort to, you know, save the quality.
Mike? Herbert?
Has the county looked at joint ventures with other counties at all?
That outlying
area, say Chandler.
That venture is a joint effort between Sheboygan and them. The formula applies. You know, we at Chautauqua County just paid 32% of the tower that went up in Toponabe. And when of the $275,000 cost that the 911 is going to incur, we'll bear 32% of that, and the other two counties will bear the rest.
But what about like Otsego County?
At this point in time, Otsego County is kind of on its own, and the outliers and all that. We're on the DNR tower out east, and we're working on the Chandler Melrose issue right now. I'm talking to Dennis. They just added to the COP tower on the south end of Petoskey, which is supposed to benefit that area significantly. It's not officially up and running yet. They're still getting through the testing phases. But the issue that needs to be resolved probably in the next 6 months is going to be the issue along 131 corridor through Boeing Falls.
I do know there's something that has gone up in Otsego County that is its cell phone capacity out in that area tremendously. Right. Anybody had looked at that.
We had talked to the 911 people about utilizing the cell technology in an effort to, and Rich was part of that conversation, in an effort to try and save money so that we're not all just throwing towers around. And for whatever reason, we're kind of committed to the technology that we're in, so the thought to branch out into these new technologies is outside of their understanding of it at this point. They're trying to stay with, they're riding the horse they bought. I got it.
Good examples of how we've got to keep communicating with each other, and when we learn new pieces, figure out how to share it so everybody that's going to be impacted hears about it. And we know that people need to hear about things more than once in order for it to go, oh yeah, I might need to know that. So communicate. Great example is our 911 was used as an example of a great inter-cooperation thing. And then when Lansing wrote the guidelines, they said you've got to serve more than 100,000 people. And so they told us, you're a good example, our three counties don't equal 100,000 people. So they're not connected with us, and we really got to keep pushing so that they know who we are and that we are unique and successful in lots of things, but that we're not 100,000 people. Mike?
I would just encourage everybody to remember that Chris and I are representatives for the CCE 911 group. So if you're having any communication issues and things of that nature, make sure that they get passed along to us so we can bring them up at the board meeting. We look at these color charts and say what the radio coverage is supposed to be. And we're trying to deal with those, the worst issues that's first. But it's real important for us to hear from you folks what, if any, issues you're having.
Dennis Howard as well. He's from the third representative.
Yeah, sorry.
Yep.
All right.
Bill.
One of the things, I don't know if everybody knows this,
Charlotte
County, but Charlotte County gives us all, I think the number is $480,000, almost $500,000.
Right.
Every year, the 911 system, as well as Hamlet and Sheboygan. So, you know, it's sometimes, I was on the board for a short time, and thank the board for Chris and Mike. They're on it now instead of me. But it is a little frustrating to see that with the technology that we have today, and the money that we have to spend today, the money that we've spent, I forget how many millions in the past 7 years, Chris.
We're $9 million into it over the last, since I think 98.
Yeah, anyway, and it's been a good, and let me say this, we have a good 911 system up there. We've rated pretty high in the state, and I think the country too. But it is still a little frustrating not to be able to communicate when it's needed.
Well, I know some of our firemen had to use their cell phones because the radios were hard.
Yes, I think over in the east part of the county, they were using the tin can in the spring.
Yeah, we're still in the middle. All right, so communication and sharing when we learn things, figuring out how do we get it out to people in the right format, and it's making sure they have the right email addresses with each other. The county did publish a directory. So if you don't have a copy, I know if you call over the county clerk's office, they'll be happy to send you a couple copies of the directory that includes all the elected officials in the county.
I'd like to just say information blurb about communication. The city of Boyne City has started social media communication with our citizens, and it has been extremely successful and very exciting to see. We've engaged citizens that we would not have otherwise through Facebook and Twitter. And it is a younger demographic. It's a 24 to 35-year-old demographic that we're able to reach that we hadn't before. We're still trying to get the under 24 age, you know, more participatory, but we've had a lot of success with that. We've involved citizens in planning and in decision-making and really honed in on public participation and citizen education. And so to the extent that that's communication and that that's something that we can utilize, that's really, I mean, very low cost, minimal resources, 5 minutes a day if you have an employee that can just quick do an info blurb, even about, you know, when meetings are coming or something that you would like citizen input about. So
the future is upon.
Yes, it is.
I struggle with my pad and won't do what I want to do.
Just one very quick thing. I'm appalled at the number of townships and township people who do not have their email addresses on their websites.
And it seems we take
for granted.
Yeah. We haven't looked to see who's
there. There have been a number of people who communicate with, but there's no phone number, no email address.
So, we should go back and look at our websites and see what information there is. Who in our community might want to communicate with us and they can't find us. It is in the phone book. If you gave them the accurate information, it's in the phone bag. Phone numbers. But we are, when we want to communicate immediately, it's like, how do we find the children? Now, let's see. Our next topic, and I didn't ask anybody from the counter. Joel?
Yeah.
Where's Joel?
Over here.
Will you introduce our county administrator HR person?
HR person slash coordinator.
Coordinator, right.
Kevin Shepard.
Process.
process, figured out there really wasn't the additional stuff there to justify, you know, $100,000+ for the administrator. And then you just matched the jobs from what I was doing to what you so what came out of it was instead of a new hire, it was basically a new assignment and responsibility. And that's what I could do. So far, so good.
Real quick.
Yes, Chris.
A couple of points to the evolution that's transpired over the last 6 years in particular. The real shift at Shawlaway County has been from the what Joel described as the frugal department heads and the people that love the county and all that. And we have really transformed it into running it like a business. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. Over the last 4 years in particular, we have begun to assign individual operating costs to each department. And by doing that, the department heads themselves have taken a bit of ownership and responsibility in helping keep those costs lower, because there were certain, we use the expression loosely, the sacred cows that have recently been gored that, the department heads, they didn't realize how much of an effect that, or what an impact it was. So we started with the health insurance, we started with all that. We started breaking it out and sending it down to the individual department and said, this is what it costs, this is where we operate. And through that, I think that we got a much greater participation and cooperation than we had in previous years. So to take that governmental mindset and shift it into operating like a business with the day-to-day operations and the cost of doing business and all that, I think has made a world of difference. And through that, we're in the process now of revamping some other systems and situations that may have gone unnoticed had we not taken on this new approach. So, but that's, again, thanks to everybody at the county and the board for the willingness to shift those gears and operate like an actual business.
And that's part of this communication, so we can learn how that change is happening, why it's happening, and the benefits we're getting. Because we've got to be about stretching our tax dollars. The citizens want us to be frugal, but they also want us to be wise. That we, that we're careful how we invest, that we're looking down the road going, where's the future going to be? Anything else on county administrator questions? Now we have a face to go with the name, so we can call over there. Trail.
Want the number?
You got the number for him? All right, Trail. You got Ross. And Ross, you brought somebody with you.
Brought Lucas.
Everybody.
And we're kind of a tag team here. Lucas is going to go through the various trails that you know that aren't happening in the state. And we're right there. Lucas is going to go through the trails and answer questions, and then when he's done, I'll give you a little update on your trail trials programs that are happening, going to be happening in the county.
All right, sorry,
it's
probably hard to see, but I'll leave this here. We've got four major kind of efforts underway right now that I just gave a quick update on. One of them is Point City to Charlotte Road. We've got that split into several phases. The first phase was direct construction happened this year, so we're finalizing plans and maybe all the folks here soon. So that first section is going to start Point City and it's 3.2 miles up to the junction line. The second phase, the funding's in place, and the second phase is coming from the other end. Kirkham Waller Road, Charlotte Road, coming out. Right, and then the third phase, we're working on concepts right now, and Josh is working on getting grants put together for that. And that's going to take us from the end of phase one through Horton Avenue to future. And then we expect two more phases after that. So that's one. Another one that's got a lot of momentum lately is Coin Valley Trailway. So that's, again, picks up in Point City, it goes out to Point Mountain, and then future phase to Point Mountain.
Well, and this might be a good time to say that Coin Valley's not here because tonight they're having their public hearing on the recreation plan, which that is part of. So they wished us all well, but they, scheduling that's where they are working on their...
They also submit that so that the direct plan has to be in place for them to be able to apply for straight grants. And so there's a grant deadline coming up on April 1st, so they're hustling that through so that we can apply for that. So that's, yeah, that one's got great momentum. There's a great local group working on that. It's great. Then Charlevoix, there's Lake to Lake Trail. I'm not involved with that, but it's out here.
Sure.
I mean, I know it's, I keep track of what's going on there, but yeah, that's expected to happen this year.
Absolutely. City was fortunate to get an MDOT enhancement grant for what we call the Lake to Lake Trail from Lake Charlevoix to Fisherman's Island State Park. Really exciting stuff. We are going to construct it this year, probably in the summer sometime. We had a generous donation from St. Mary's Cement Company, an old railroad bed that was donated to Charlevoix Township for the purpose of basically using it to connect the two lakes. So it will be done this summer, and we're also working with a regional coalition and enhancing regional trails from Elk Rapids and other trails. So exciting stuff on the trail front.
That's for sure. And that's the last thing I have here is extending from the Lake Trail down to the an effort, a pretty good effort that's been revived in this. It's in the works right now, but all this is
well, and trails can be small or they can be large. We've got one we're working with the Wildland Lake Association Conservation Group to develop a trail on a piece of property that we own and connect with a trail on a piece of property that they have in the conservancy.
Right.
So it will end up being a decent trail to hike with great views of Wildland between a nonprofit group and the township.
Yeah, these are just a few examples. I know there's things that I'm not involved with mountain biking, and so on, those types of trails, lots of others.
And Challenge Mountain is working on developing some trails that not only will be on their property, but will extend out into the city land. They came last year and talked to our board about it because it's in a township. But accessible trails. So lots of exciting things. Any other comments on trails? Larry and then Joel?
Question. What will happen to the Lake to Lake Trail and the trail from Charlevoix to hook up to Traverse City if the land swap for DNR and Wichita St. Mary's can be on it? Any idea?
I don't have any idea.
As you're aware, Larry, the Lake to Lake Trail goes out to Bells Bay Road, which is still on US 31. So I see that if the land swap does occur, that would still be a critical portion of the trail coming from Elk Rapids northward. It's all a linkage and would all create further synergies to create those linkages between Traverse City, Elk Rapids, Charlevoix, East Jordan, Boyne City. So it's all going in the right direction, and I think the land swap is something that could be many, many years out. What we would like to see is some master planning to show how we're going to preserve trails and recreational uses within the Charlevoix area and within Fisherman's Island State Park.
Joel?
Yes, I just want to thank Ross and Max, who worked so hard on these trails from the beginning. We had, maybe some of you were at some of the meetings that we had, this was a controversial thing, this was a trail, you know, that people thought we were going to do a property, and it was something like it. But Ross has stuck in there, and he's done a great job. He's getting the grants taken care of. I just want to give him thanks to make all this hard work. Larry, you too. Larry was on the planning commission for a time. You know, Larry with the bike trails and so on. So thank you guys for working on these trails.
Well, it's important for us to remember that some of these visions don't happen overnight. That it takes months and years of building support, educating people that can influence where these kinds of projects go, right?
I'd just like to say what's happening now, too, are the Trail Town programs. Boyne City has a committee. Charlevoix has a Trail Town committee. And I understand East Jordan is also, if they haven't, they're starting one. And what it does, it maximizes the economic potential for trail-based tourism. We all know for us locals what the trails are good for, health, connectivity, safety. But for the economics, it's a great program. I don't know if you have anything you'd like to say about the city trail town for me.
Well, we're working on a plan. I mean, a lot of it's just we're on the whole trailhead. You know, Boise is really at a peak. But Boise City is in a desirable position because of what the celebrated Boise City Trail is in development, the Boise City Trail is in development. So we're at a really great opportunity to be able to create signage, wayfinding signage, how we connect the trails to our downtown and to our local businesses. We're working with LIAA, Parrish Burkhart. This is the first time that they've really worked with this program, and Ross has been a big help. We've got communication here as well. People really draw a lot of people into our town, into our planning that we don't normally receive. So it's been great.
I just want to comment on I hear what Rob said about this possible land swap being a little business in the future. I tend to disagree with that, but that being said, when you develop a trail, those that are involved in it know that one of the most difficult things is trying to determine where it's going to be. And in the case of the Charlevoix to Elk Rapids portion of this, the bulk of it is going to be Fisherman's Island State Park and St. Mary's Cemetery. And St. Mary's, I can't say enough kind things about their involvement in the community. The things that they do. They've committed to make the trail on the perimeter of their property as far west and south as they can, and they will provide the trail for that purpose. Brian Kelly, who you all know, has done a topographical map from that point south through Fisherman's Island State Park, and they plan on, when the snow is gone, literally walking the portions that they feel through Fisherman's Island State Park, because we want to stay high, we want to get into wetlands and stay away from those delicate areas that we have out there as well. But that's going very, very well. We really feel good about it getting to the county line pretty quick.
Yay. Well, and it's cooperation between the state and the city and the county and business, you know, that they want to help build communities and make these other places.
Yeah, and this is not running the show over the roads. This is going to be a really beautiful trail through the
So we've got exciting stuff going on, and ways for our citizens to be involved if we inform them that, hey, we need volunteers to work on this committee, or we need volunteers to work on projects out of the park. One of the things is you get groups that want to do something, but they don't know how to find the agency that could use them. You know, so part of our communication is, when you get the call that says, hey, I've got a group that would be interested in doing, knowing who to call or who to send them to for connecting. I know the Mountain Bike people had a 2.5-day conference. They rented our hall. And it was like, I wanted to stay and listen. What all kinds of cool stuff they're learning about building trails. And we're all excited about helping communities develop mountain bike trails. So here's people who want to do that. And then we've got to connect to them.
One of the things they talked about in the trail town process is not just the typical biking, hiking type of trail. There needs to be trails along the lakefront, a variety of trails. One of the trails that we've been kind of talking about in Boyd City for about the last 5 or 6 years is there some opportunities for some new snowmobile trails through the region? You know, we have a trail that goes to Charlevoix, trails that go to East Jordan. Boynton City feels kind of out of the loop. We think that should also be a real economic engine for wintertime trails as well, too. So I don't know if there's any townships around Boynton City that would like to enter into discussion. I thought maybe bring some snowmobile groups together especially while it's on everybody's mind right now. We're having this great winter. There's some opportunities to make it more economically viable for us when we have all this.
Well, there's a group out in our township that wants a snowmobile trail.
What's that?
There's a group out in our township that wants a snowmobile trail.
Well, if there's any interest, that's just an opportunity to bring those groups together and see if something might actually happen other than just talk.
Yeah, and another thing is, the water trails, developing water trails through Lake Michigan, County, Charlotte, all over the state, the rivers. That's another big priority on being our trust fund, trails and water trails. And the trail towns do involve ORV trails, snowmobile trails, equestrian trails, bicycle trails, walking trails.
John?
That's
a
bicycle. And is there anybody from the road commission here? Nobody was, I guess. The reason, and I got a question, and maybe Larry can answer it, is it's about the bicycle people. Yeah, what's the ones that they start down in South somewhere and come through like Bel Air or something like that, come to Jordan?
The Delmax thing.
Well, here's the problem. When they go to the Southland Township meetings, they're real concerned about. Is anybody familiar with the Wilson Road from East Jordan going toward, going up the hill? The hill, the all the bicycle, the people call it the wall.
Yeah.
Okay. What happened last year was a near accident when you get somebody at the Southland County. So what they're saying is, should the County Road Commission put up signs? Should they do this? Or should the bicycle people put some signs up? What, how can we? Because the rest of the hill, everybody knows what that is. I mean, you can't see it going up, you can't see it coming down. And these bicyclers quite often stop partway up a lot of them. They're standing on the road. The road is very narrow there. I guess I told the township I would check with them. I haven't talked to Pat on the way up to see if he had some ideas about signs during that period of time. But, how about the bicycle people? Larry, do you know who like the time?
So there's a means by which the road commission or some cities, they can designate areas as bike routes.
They want to keep, I'm sure the bicycle people want to keep that route.
Uh-huh. But we need to make it safe.
They love that challenge.
John?
make sure it doesn't get forgotten, you know, and next year this race gets here. Before the jump here, I guess I need to just go to the county and go to the county. Well, the Dolmet organizers are, you know, they're... Okay, I'd like to hear from them what they think. Sure. They might be able to do something to promote safety there. Yeah, on their own. I think it's long meetings or... All right, Joe, here. The big issue out there is you have the bikers coming up Bailing Road. Okay. Everybody's standing up there taking photographs down the hill of their partners. You know, we talked to the Delmat coordinators, the people that work the road and that, and they said, we'll try to do something. The officers go up there, myself and Don's people, and we get a rash from them. What do you mean? You know, I'm standing here taking pictures of that. They don't care that a car is coming at 55 miles an hour towards them. They don't care about the traffic coming up. You have the Delmac riders all over the road, not in single file or coming up in their lane. They're all over Bayman Road. And the Delmac people don't want to get involved or do anything about it to control the people that are on the race. And then the deputies and my officers get nothing but grief when we go up there and try and escort them off into a safe area.
All right, so we've got a communication issue, we've got connections and names, and we need to say, we want you here, we want you using this road, but we want you safe. And we want our community to still drive, be able to drive on the road in a safe fashion. So great example of how putting everything together, we can say, how do we fix it? How do we make it better for next year? Any other comments? We got lots of opportunity with trails. Our next topic, I'm going to peek at the agenda. Broadband. Todd has invited a couple guests to, because we were all fired up last year that we were going to get broadband all over the county, and then something happened.
And you know how the federal government has trouble passing budgets, and then they get in fights about it? The problem is the programs that have that funding, all of a sudden it gets sequestered or stopped. And groups who need that funding for low-interest loans keep working at it, but they don't have the money. And that's what we run into. That's what Air North Networks has run into. Before we start, how many people have internet? You raise your hand. Who doesn't have internet? Would you raise your hands? Okay, so the entire group's got internet. More or less. Okay, how many of you have broadband or cable internet? Okay. How many of you are using a satellite dish? How many of you are using your cell phone? How many of you have dial-up? Okay. Back in 2011, Wilson Township decided that we have a problem with internet. We had two of our board members that didn't have internet. We went satellite with one. The other person was using dial-up, then started using their cell phone. And the coverage is spotty at best, and it becomes extremely expensive in a real hurry. Also, trying to communicate with your residents in the township is almost impossible when you know that over 50% of them don't have any access other than dial-up. Connect Michigan, while they're trying to do a good job, when they talk to carriers like AT&T, Verizon, Charter, they all say, oh yeah, we've got that area covered. Well, then when you start analyzing it, and they've been doing a much better job of that, you start finding that people don't have coverage, they don't have internet, they can't get internet. So we did a survey in Wilson Township and discovered that, yeah, our residents really want it. So we started working on plans to either build the towers ourselves or find a company that would work with us and build the towers. We were also looking at going for the USD Rural Development RUS grants, Rural Utility Services grants. Loans. We would borrow the money, build a tower, find a company to run the system for us. Well, what happened was I found out that a gentleman that I had worked with about a year prior to this actually had kept his company going, and we're in the process of applying for the same monies that we were looking for. And that was Mike Wotalski. He's now with North Air Networks, and also with him is Martin Fields with North Air Networks. So I'd like to introduce now Mike Wotalski and let him do a presentation on what they're up to.
Hi, how are you? I've just got a very brief presentation just to add to what Todd said. Air North Communications, we're looking at a network working with the federal government through the USDA Rural Utility Service for the low interest financing. This network has 100% coverage. Anybody who wants a minimum of 5 megabyte connection at an affordable price, it's going to be available to them. I've been involved in this project for the better part of 3 years now. But good news is we're getting close. With that said, I've just got a very brief presentation here to show you guys what's been going on and where we're at today. Bear with me here. So I don't know if you guys will see this, but I do have the network propagation studies here and some of the more relevant pieces of information that I can share with you here. Basically, in a nutshell, what happened is, and my background is in telecommunications. I come from what's called a CLEC, a competitive local exchange carrier, a local exchange carrier, as opposed to your ILECs, your incumbents, your AT&T, Verizon, Frontier, etc. So I've been in telecom for forever. Several years back, all rural telecommunications networks are subsidized. They're subsidized through the Universal Service Fund, and it was a mechanism called the high-cost loop mechanism. The logic behind these programs for the last 60 decades is it's much more affordable to bring a guy a telephone line in Detroit, Michigan, than it is to bring him a telephone line in Marquette, Michigan, you know, running through the woods, etc. As the internet evolved, your internet delivery mechanism was always a telephone line, period. You know, we put there's other methods, but of course, the predominant one was to put a DSL line on a telephone line, bring internet that way. Through the Universal Service Fund, the high-cost loop mechanism, the decision was made in 2011 that by the FCC, we're going to restructure that. It's going to be now called Connect America Funds. The technologies are here. The technologies work. You've all heard of VoIP. Instead of the copper telephone line being the primary delivery system, we're going to start putting all of these subsidies toward broadband networks. When that happened, man, I got to resize this bit with me. Well, I'm not going to be able to. October 27, 2011, when that happened, that's when the Air North networks, when the whole project began. The FCC approved a six-year transfer process that would transition money from the Universal Service Fund high-cost loop program to a new $4.5 billion a year Connect America Fund for broadband internet expansion, effectively putting an end to the Universal Service Fund high-cost loop fund by 2018. October 28th, is when the original Ariston Networks, Air North Networks, well, we began the engineering. We began the propagation studies. Up here, we're not going to be able to bring fiber to everybody's house. It's just that simple. Fiber to the prem is the ultimate solution. In rural America, the return on investment is not there. It's nowhere near. That ain't going to happen. It's going to be a robust wireless infrastructure. Financial studies, and most importantly, the financial feasibility studies. It's not cheap to do it right. To build a network that will provide 100% coverage just in Charlevoix County is well in excess of $3 million at this point. And we really can't charge every end user $1,500 a month to get on it. So, November 1st, 2011. This is when, after we did the initial propagation, started looking at financial feasibility, the management and engineering team decided that, you know, this could work. It's not going to work with traditional financing. This is when we began working with the USDA. I'd worked with the USDA in the past, so I knew of those mechanisms that were there. August 17th of 2012, the first complete application was sent in officially to Washington. This is the original network. The original network included Chippewa, Mackinac, and Luce counties in the UP. One thing it really didn't include, and you guys can all thank Mr. Sorensen, was the southern part of Charlevoix County. And I'll explain why. That application was submitted for $25,272. $25,272,943. Washington responded to that application October 4th. We want to know more. That application, there were some questions very simply just about contiguous service areas or all formalities. The UP and the Lower Peninsula should be completely different areas. They're separated by large bodies of water. et cetera, et cetera. July 16th, an official application went in again. Of course, involving the eight counties, really, were touched on there. Last year, August 22nd, 2013, when they say RUS, I'm talking Rural Utility Service, again, they have some additional concerns. At the time, those concerns are not justified, we found out now. Todd wrapped it up when he said the different things that were going on with our government. We had sequestering. We had a government shutdown. These guys already have all that American Reinvestment Recovery Act money, all that stimulus money, all these big fiber pipes, all these other services that were being built off of it to monitor and police. So it was a little bit of a challenge. Here's what we have right now. This is through the efforts of Connect Michigan. This data is as of October of 2013. Very recent data. Just bear with me here. I'm looking for something. I don't know if you can all see this map right here. This is a current coverage. Everything you see in yellow is there's no service. It's underserved. It's recognized in Washington. It's recognized all over. It's underserved. We're down here, Charlevoix County. You see that dark blue? That right there means that you have in excess of five providers, at least five providers, all providing at least 5 megabytes of data at an affordable rate. Green area, pretty much the same. This has been a little bit of a challenge for us, but we continue to fight through it because the government wants to put these funds where they need them the most, where there is absolutely no connectivity. In working with Todd and getting out there in the field, instead of just sitting behind a desk and looking at maps and looking at data sets, it became pretty apparent to me, too. Wow, a lot of these people aren't connected that, quote-unquote, are supposed to be connected. This is what I'm looking at. Same thing that Washington's looking at. In Charlevoix County here, we've got let me just explain this. This green right here, these are identified as they're true competitors. They're companies that are putting some form of internet out here in some fashion. 1, 2, 3, 4. Five, six, seven. We have three competitors, or I have competitors, you guys have providers. They're in red. Island Telephone, TDS, Metrocom on the island, that don't count. That's not part of this network. You have three companies right in here that we've confirmed. They, through their own admission, we don't offer any broadband service at all there. Challenge that I had to overcome in Washington was the amount of competition. Mike, the only financial feasibility we questioned is down in that Charlevoix County area. There's 20 providers down there. My challenge was, no, there isn't. Here's where we're at today with the network. The internet, in relooking at the internet service providers in Northern, it reinforces their assertion. The majority of the suburban rural areas, they remain without reasonably priced broadband alternatives. This is what we decided to do with the original network that I showed you. We busted it into two sections to expedite the build of the network. We now have the Lower Peninsula as phase one, which includes Charlevoix, Emmett, Presqu'ile and Sheboygan counties. Chippewa, Mackinac, and Luce are phase two. This network is an $11 to $14 million build. We're utilizing the new Connect Michigan findings. When we started this more than 2 years ago, it was worse. All of the big providers were reporting that we have coverage there. No, they didn't have coverage there. Through the efforts of Connect Michigan and what they've done, they're really starting to populate the broadband map properly. We've taken broadband and with working with Connect Michigan or broadband access right down to a census tract level. We used to do it through telephone companies, which were entire exchanges. 231, 625, whatever. No, now we're down to census tract level. Most recently, we have put into our financials, we've quadrupled our marketing budget. And look for that this spring. The low interest financing through the Rural Utility Service that also requires capital investment on my part or on my investor's part. The USDA requires a 10% equity as well, you know, behind this network, 10% in cash. So what we did is we almost doubled that number behind the amount of money behind this play this time. A lot of new strong partners. February 7th, the loan that Todd was referring to for the Rural Utility Service help, or the government financing that he found out when he called the reps from Washington, there's a company working on it already. This comes through, it's the broadband loan program. It's very favorable financing. It gives a company an opportunity, or at least a mechanism, to go ahead and to build these networks into these very remote places that the return on investment just isn't there initially. So those programs are funded through the Farm Bill. We haven't had a Farm Bill at the USDA for 6 years. Okay, the 2008 Farm Bill, which is how these programs are all funded, it was just extended. It was bandaged. February 7th, it finally got signed. So we have a new farm bill. So those buckets of money, if you will, they're filled again, which is a good thing. This is the network as it sits today, or this is going to be that will be phase one. Just the four counties in the Lower Peninsula. These areas you see in orange. This is relevant for the four counties you guys are touching on here. These are what is now currently recognized as unserved areas through the efforts of Connect Michigan. Unserved meaning they really don't have access. They might have access to a satellite internet connection. We don't consider satellite internet connections broadband internet. There's bandwidth usage caps. It's not practical. You're not going to be able to use it for business. You don't want to stream a movie unless it's going to cost a lot. This is the new network that is that we're looking at right now. In a nutshell, this mapping tool right here, this comes from the federal government through USDA. There's a few last things they're working on with this mapping of this network. We anticipate we're about 30 days out. From real close on this, hey guys, what do you think of this four count? It's simply four counties now, and the goal is to be building by spring.
This spring?
Look, I don't want to make any promises, because every time I do this, and it's been happening in 5 years, yes, this spring.
Yay!
We're very confident, as well as a lot of the people at the Rural Utility Service are confident that the big hurdles are over. The big hurdles meaning the farm bill, number one. This network was approved for funding last September or so. And how that worked is the Rural Utilities Service said, you know what, this is a great plan. The engineering works. The financial feasibility is there. You know, we have a few issues internally we have to work through. Go ahead, pull the funds from the Rural Telephone Bank. Okay, the Rural Telephone Bank is just another government lender, but I can assure you it's not as favorable as the broadband loan program through the USDA Rural Utilities Service. I made the decision back then, no, we're not gonna break ground, we're not gonna start building it. I'm a firm believer one in the hand is worth more than two in the bush. And thank goodness, because with the way the series of events went down, it would have been a serious financial challenge for us. Any questions they could answer?
You talked to the actual technology you're utilizing the tower to reach the homes and what kind of speeds you're...
I can tell you about speeds. I can touch on the technology. I'm not from the engineering side. I certainly could. We could do a follow-up, which you guys will see us for. If you want to get that deep of a level, we're going to use a licensed 365 spectrum. The network is built primarily utilizing AirSpan equipment, the same suppliers that Verizon uses. Speeds, we're going to offer, we can push 30 megabytes across this thing easy enough. And as the technology evolves, and this doesn't evolve annually these days, it's every month something new, so it's faster and faster. Primarily, we're looking at 1.5 megs, 3 megs, 5 megs, and then we'll go from there. $29, $39, $49. I originally simplified the entire pro formas by saying, look it, I'm going to offer one speed, one price primarily. 5 megs for $40 or $39.95. That's 5 megs aggregated. 4 megs down, 1 meg up. The nice thing about this network, some of you you probably experience it now where you get your up to speeds. Well, up to was always a marketing gig. You know, you might be able to get up to 10 megs, but I'm going to give you half of a meg. You know, or that's what you're going to get when everybody else is using the network. This network, because it's essentially a partnership with, you know, the Rural Utility Service, the maximum we could ever oversubscribe the network is 20 to 1. Oversubscribed means if I'm offering you a 50 megabyte service, I don't have 50 megabytes here. I'm selling that same 50 megabytes probably to 200 people because I know you're not all going to be using it at the same time. This network maximum oversubscription is 20 to 1. So, and right now, because of the way we were able to aggregate the demand and working with K-12 education, working with the main recipients and sub-recipients of the ARRA money for the, you know, on the middle mile, we're actually undersubscribed probably 1,000 to 1. So you'll have some incredible speeds over the network. We'll deal with typical issues. We fully anticipate it that a wireless infrastructure would. You know, some of the degradation issues, et cetera, et cetera. But.
So if you start building this spring, when are people going to be able to sign up and have service?
What we will do is within about 45 days, and I'll go through Mr. Sorensen, actually, it's been an excellent avenue for us. We'll just keep you. What I'm doing here tonight is I'm just letting you guys know, hey, we didn't quit, you know, because we fully anticipated building last November. And for an area that has 98% coverage, boy, when you start telling people there's going to be internet, you'd be surprised how the phones ring. And I don't need that again. I would say 45 days to let you know, and that's going to be, you know, real close. And
I will make sure you all know. Believe me.
Yeah.
Hey. So don't renew your contracts if they're getting close. Keep them open-ended. Now, how does this fit with the Merritt lines, the fiber optic lines that got laid?
Because Merritt handles this. That's all American Reinvestment Recovery Act money, stimulus money. Okay, Merritt was the recipient. Merritt deals primarily with colleges. Okay, that's how they started. And that's a common misunderstanding. Everyone says Merritt pipe. Well, there's other sub-recipients that own more fiber strands in that pipe than Merritt. It just got it got known as the Merritt pipe. Uh-huh. Probably one of the largest ones is Great Lakes ComNet, ComLink. Lynx Networks is another one. Those pipes are what we're building off of. That's how I'm able
so
to have.
To tap into that and be able to provide
yes.
service.
That was, you know, that was a theory. We invest all this money so that everybody can have broadband. There are 98% of Americans can have broadband. It's a necessity these days. They invest all this money in this great big pipe. Well, how the heck does everybody get on it then? That was the challenge. This is the last mile piece. Yes, cool. We're tapping into those pipes and spreading off from there, distributing from there.
Yeah, Mike?
Yeah.
What about equipment costs for the individual?
This is another thing, okay? We initially had a zero install cost, okay? What we did is we said that we are charging this zero install cost, but we're going to ask for a two-year agreement with the service level agreement behind it. If you're not happy with the service, you can leave, no problem. But to offset the cost of install, two-year service agreement. That was another area because of current marketing these days that the rural utility service said, you know, we don't like two-year agreements anymore. We don't think anybody would ever go for that because of the no contract. You know, that's all just marketing. We're exploring right now where we're looking at $100 on a one-year agreement with a service level agreement behind it. If you don't like it, leave. I can hold you hostage. Hopefully, and I don't know for sure, I could keep that still at the zero install.
Mike, did you have a question?
I couldn't tell from your map how much of Charlevoix County was being covered.
All of it. The original map, the southwest corner, including Wilson Township, was not on my map. And the reason it wasn't is because all the data was coming back that they got plenty of connectivity down there. The map, the service area has been completely redefined to include specifically these four counties.
So it will include all of our townships.
All of them. This is a county line down here for Charlevoix County. Yeah, so every township will be.
Okay, so it's not just the orange areas on this.
No, the orange right here is what's recognized, just terrible, terrible, terrible areas.
Okay.
I mean, we all know that. Even in Washington, they know that.
That was the one thing that we were aiming at for Wilson Township. We wanted 100% coverage, not like Charter, where it's just where the cable is, not like my spot. Agra Valley is a good company, don't get me wrong. But that dish, that tower that they have can only reach so far, and if you're on the other side of the hill, you're gone. And Wilson Township, we've got Deer Lake, we've literally got a circle of hills around part of our township, and the rest of the townships know what I'm talking about. You get on the other side of the hill, you got nothing. So.
Are there any more towers going up because of this? Are you citing more towers?
Ultimately, yes. We've got all the tower arrangements right now. We work with a number of the larger tower companies. We actually work with ERS. I mean, those are the guys that just put in the new 180 911 tower. Well, now it's up to 220 911 towers. We have relationships with them, with Michigan Towers. What we do is we're using the large key towers, but then there's a lot of technology on different levels. Even in Washington these days recognizes what's called non-conventional structures where we can repeat signals, where we can really mesh out this network. So there's layers and layers and layers. Simple answer is no, not at first, if we can avoid it. Because that slows things down again. So, right. All the permit, the towers that are on, and we'd be happy to share engineering studies, the tower studies, everything. All the permitting that's gone on last year, because, you know, that stuff all took a lot of time. by the time we bring in our power, and then when we got the fiber that's got to be pulled, the towers that we need fiber at, the anchor towers, all done already.
Do you have a website?
Ariston.com is still up. They don't have it here because we're in the process of redoing the website. I'll be brutally honest with you. We've been working on this project so long, and we were set to go last year, last fall. We were told to go. We were told where to get the money. And like I said, from that rural telephone bank, it just worked out better that we did it. The project is smaller at this point. You know, it's down to $14 million for these four counties. But we can really allocate and point all of our resources, you know, where they need to be. I can tell you guys, too, that the first tower rings going in are Sheboygan and Charlevoix. So you're at the top of the list. Don't tell that to, you know, people from Presque Isle.
We had a crystal ball.
Right.
But it sounds like we're making some progress. And we'll have access to much higher speed and much more dependable.
Yeah, it's definitely dependable. It's a very robust network. It's completely undersubscribed. It's regulated by anywhere. And normally, networks aren't regulated. I mean, we can usually get away with whatever we want. Not this one.
Cool. Well, that kind of moves us then to our last topic tonight. Mike, please introduce yourself, people.
Thank you.
No, please introduce yourself, people. Providing emergency services, especially ambulance service, is a challenge that all elected officials need to face. And we're kind of unique that here in Charlevoix County, we have three different solutions that are working. And they're evolving, and they're looking at, you know, how else do we need to do things? Do we have everybody covered? And so we've asked representatives for those three programs to kind of give us a summary and tell us what's going on. So Mike, will you please introduce our emergency medical people?
Well, I'm sorry, I was talking to the guys. We have three providers here that provide the bulk of ambulance services here in Charlevoix County, and there's some different things going on with each of them. So we have representatives from Charlevoix, Boyne City, and East Jordan that we're going to take a few minutes and talk a little bit about what's going on in their organization. Rob, you want to kick off?
Sure. Thank you, Mike. City of Charlevoix, I'm no expert on EMS or fire, but fortunately I have some very competent people that I work with that really run a great show for our part of the county. We offer EMS and fire services to five townships, including the city of Charlevoix. The EMS services are for Hayes, Charlevoix Township, Norwood, Marion Township, and a part of Eveline. And we've recently been in discussions with our county or township supervisors regarding creating the EMS authority. And we've been in discussions for approximately, I would say, 6 to 8, maybe 10 months or so, and have looked at all the logistical challenges and some of the financing mechanisms and creating bylaws and things like that, and we found out that it is a huge endeavor to take upon itself. And with all the training associated with EMS, with all the certifications, with the equipment, with coverage, with billing, with administration, it's really a big team approach that you need a lot of the key players working together to pull it off. The townships, and certainly Frank or John, if you'd like to chime in, we're still continuing with our discussions, but I think we're finding that with the city services, we give a great service. Everybody agrees that EMS services are fantastic. We have very passionate, very competent people and staff. But the townships would like more of a say in the overall operations of the EMS. But we can't quite come to a resolution in how to come about this. And we looked at initial cost estimates, and we figured we probably couldn't do it any cheaper than the city is offering at this point. How we kind of divvy up the cost on the EMS is according to the number of calls within each township and within the city. We look at it from the past 2 years, and then we basically prorate that portion according to the cost to run the EMS services. What we're looking at right now is maybe looking at different criteria other than just response calls looking at property valuations, population, number of homes, and response time. So you have more of a criteria, and you would possibly reduce some of those ebbs and flows that you'll see in a two-year formula. So we're working closely with our townships. We haven't quite cracked the overall notion of creating an EMS authority and how we're going to fund that. But I think if you look at it from a kind of an informal standpoint, we are creating a regional EMS service, and it seems to work pretty well with the city of Charlevoix. I would think that overall, if we could look at a region-wide authority and look at some economies of scale, that would probably be the ultimate way to go about this. With how many townships we have in Charlevoix County and with some of the municipalities and certainly the politics that go along with that, that would be quite a challenge. And I think that what we want to do is bring in a consultant and bring everybody together and look at it for a year or so and see how we could do this and if we could do it not only cheaper, but if we could also create those great response times and that saves people's lives. So it's always a interesting, spirited discussion with the city of Charlevoix and some of the townships, but I think it's a very productive partnership, and there's certainly ways that we can refine it moving forward. Frank or John, do you have anything to add to those to that brief summary? Okay.
The only comment I have to make is for years there's been this unknown quantity, and I think that's what we're attempting to do now, is to define that unknown quantity. I don't think anyone has ever criticized the service that we get from the city. As representing a township, I'm trying to do it for the least amount of money I possibly can, and that's the approach we're taking. We're just trying to see various formulas, if you will, to satisfy us that we're getting a fair shake financially. Make sense?
Sure. Any questions?
Okay, who's got a second?
Do you remember a gentleman I've been EMS director in Boyne City for the past 10 years. Over the last 18 months, 2 years, we actually brought the two services of Boyne Valley together in Boyne City and we're back under one license. So when Robin mentioned that there's three services, we're forgetting Beaver Island. It's actually, originally there were five services, now there's four services bringing EMS to our communities. And then by partnering together with Boyne Valley, we're able to deliver a better response time, particularly to the far out reaches of Hudson Township or to the south end of the Melrose Township, whereas we would historically have waited for people to come to the station, man a vehicle, respond that vehicle, and so you'd have a significant response time delay. Now, today, just as an example, we have two ALS trucks sitting staffed, ready to respond from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., and then after 6 p.m. at night, we still maintain two paramedics, one operating non-transporting echo vehicle that's able to respond into a community as if it was a full-time service. And we're doing this on volunteers that are that receive a per diem to be available. This is where Cindy and I argue back and forth whether or not it's a full-time employee. This is going to make us a large employer or a small employer. We're like, no, we're volunteers. But by working together with Gordon Falls, we're able to back and forth move staff and support each other. And I had to bring a visual aid. Thank you to the state of Michigan and some wonderful congressman who said, you know, where people are dying in the street because we don't have EpiPens. So they passed a law that said every non-advanced life support vehicle has to have an EpiPen on board. Well, last year, the people that product this and put it together said, you don't need one, you have to have two. So this cost us $427 to put on a shelf that expires. And so by working together, Bruce and I don't have one on each shelf expiring. We're able to call each other up and say, do you got an extra EpiPen? Oh yeah, I got an extra EpiPen. And that way, we're really meeting the, you know, as need or what's that, you know, your inventory on demand or inventory on time. And so we do the same thing with the number of the equipment in our ambulances. Because you got to remember, combined together, we do about 960 responses. And so a lot of our equipment will expire before it ever makes it to a patient. And I hate going through that little monthly routine of pulling the expired equipment off. And so by working together and sharing, we're able to maximize that. We will maximize response times into the residents. They will support the Squatters Administrator as far as billing. They're able to build together in one building venue and actually reduce costs. And so I do like, I come from a system of authorities, or I come from a system, and anybody see last week's paper, last Friday's paper? Emmett County just are going to come up and try to figure out how to fund $1.3 million in order to maintain EMS. Most of you think of EMS as a, you have a term for me. What type of...
You're optional.
Yeah, I know. but I'm supposed to make money.
Oh.
And so...
Enterprise fund.
EMS, can you ask anybody north of M55, you don't make money. So you got to have volume to make money. You know, you got to have...
That's a horrible thing to say.
Well, but I was teasing Vernon when someone was talking about the Dell Mac. He was like, you know? But without working together, you know, each community is going to trouble to try to maintain this resource. And when you have a truck on the road, it's $17,520 of staff time for one truck. We have more resources in Charlevoix County at less expense than Emmett County, but Emmett County, you know, if you start counting trucks, you know, there's three trucks in my bay, two trucks in Bruce's bay. Jay's got four trucks. Bob's got, so if you start looking at resources to respond to a catastrophic moment, and I got to tell you, as far as the county, you couldn't ask for better cooperation, working together, covering each other's backs, covering each other's communities. So I'm really excited about the EMS, but that's what we're doing in one city. The one thing I wanted to mention, that you mentioned, we have a similar formula. Rob mentioned the fact that they did a two-year history. A couple of years ago, I served six townships besides the city, and getting together, we came up to the fact that we can't do it on SCB, we do it on dwellings. So just because it's a summer dwelling, it's still a dwelling that has people there, so it's a community besides the volume, the three-year history on volume, it's a history on dwellings. And so that way it comes back, and so we take an arbitrary number that says, okay, the city does 50%, the townships do 50%, here's how much money everybody's got to generate in order to keep the books.
Yeah, hey.
Chris?
Started about over a year ago.
Sure it was longer.
Well, I've only been here a year and a half, and I didn't start out. Right. All right, we'll go a whole year and a half. To echo a lot of what's been said already, we try and operate the best we can on revenues from reimbursements. But as we all know, Medicare reimbursement rates are down. People without health insurance up until just recently is down. Private pay is down. A lot of uninsured is up. So it was a negative option. And ours was set up. Us is spread over two counties in East Jordan, us in Antrim, and seven different jurisdictions, the city plus six townships. So we formed a steering committee of all of the seven entities and have been exploring different options. Initially looked at different formulas on how to set it up. The biggest thing that we wanted to get to was that we continued to ask for more increases and more increases from our townships who contracted with us. Yet they didn't have a say in how we ran the department. So in order to give them that say, we wanted to set that up as an authority and give each one of the contracting townships a seat at the board, on the board, at the table. In return for us, April of next year, hopefully turning over our assets and liabilities to this new authority. We've gotten to the point now where we've adopted our articles of incorporation. Six of the seven entities have approved those. We have five jurisdictions that are, we call, you know, for lack of a better term, the founding fathers, if you will. Those are the five that have their total jurisdictions within our service area. And under state law, that's the ones that can be part of your authority. However, we do have two with Wilson and Emmeline that we only service about half of theirs. So we brought them into the Articles of Incorporation as contracting entities. Still gave them a seat, a full seat at the board, but it had to be set up separately as a contract through that authority. So the Articles of Incorporation are done. They've been published in both the Charlevoix County and Antrim papers, and they've actually been sent off to the Office of the Great Seal in Lansing. So for all intents and purposes, as soon as that comes back, we'll have an authority in place. We're now in the process of naming board members for each one of the entities, and now the real work starts, if we thought this was easy, going through and looking at all of the expenses, revenue sources, trying to figure out how the authority is going to handle things, everything from mowing lawns and plowing snow that the city used to take care of, maintenance on vehicles, who's going to do health care, who's going to do all of the personnel, human services stuff. So that we've got a lot of long way to go, but we've come a long way in a very short period of time. We looked at those formulas. We looked at various different options, and the consensus of the steering committee at that time was to move ahead with this great millage option. So that will hopefully go before the voters probably in August of this year. We don't yet know what the millage amount will be. It may be somewhere in the 0.3 to 0.5 mil range. Don't quote me on that. That's all going to be subject to change. We want to keep it as low as possible. As you said, we're not here to make money, but we do have to pay the bills. So a lot of this is going to depend on, and we've been working with John and Emmeline Township. They're looking at some boundary changes, and until those boundary changes are solidified, especially for us, we can't really put a taxable value on what's left in our service area. So that's going to impact where our millage levy is going to be. But all in all, I think we've come a long way. Rob, I can certainly echo what you said. If we could go to something like Emmett had and have a countywide ambulance EMS millage that gets somehow politically acceptably divvied up between the providers, that to me would make a whole lot more sense than to have all of these individual millages or formulas or whatever. So if we can head in that direction, we'd certainly want to go that way. So, questions?
I just have a comment. Chris mentioned that Wilson and Evelyn Township are contracting members of the authority. That also means a little difference in millage. For example, the founding fathers go to the entire group of townships in the city of East Jordan and pass a millage with all of those entities involved in it. In John's case and my case, Wilson Township's case, we have to supply our own funding. Now, we're fortunate because we had already had a millage in place taking care of our emergency services, so we're fine. But John's got a little bit more difficult road to hoe because they don't have a millage in place. Correct me if I'm wrong, John.
No. We would pick up about 60% of that bill over there.
Yeah.
Because we have too much sheep.
I wish I had that problem in Wilson Township.
But you know, when you run a village, we have three different villages for three different communities. Mm-hmm. How do you sort people out? The people of Charlevoix area don't want to pay for East Jordan. Point City has people living in the Point City district don't want to pay for East Jordan.
But that's millage pays for, our millage pays for all the emergency services.
Right.
We don't differentiate them, and as the bills come in, they are paid.
Three different solutions to a service that we all need to be concerned about providing. We have the challenge of the lakes that make it real hard to deliver the service. As big as Emmett County is, they don't have these great big lakes that you have to get around. We're part of the reason why we have three different solutions. Any other comments on ambulance emergency? I'm going to ask you to pull out your form, that's your exit survey. I need you to give us direction for topics in the future, for do we do this kind of meeting again next year? Reminder that we did it in February this year because in January the state Michigan Township Association Convention was in Traverse City, and during the same week we normally meet. So we did have five townships from Traverse County attend at least one day at the state convention, which was exciting because the last couple times when I went to Grand Rapids, I was the only person from Charlevoix County that went. And it's well worth going. In fact, our MTA meeting next month, we need somebody to volunteer to host it, but the topic is going to be sharing what people learned at the convention and why it's an experience you might want to put into your budget and encourage board members to attend. Because it's opportunities to learn all kinds of things, to get all these kind of goodies that I brought and got sent to us for our meeting, but to meet other townships around the state that are fighting the same kinds of battles. So if you have topics, if you want to volunteer tentatively, our MTA chapter meeting topics that I have lined up for this year, and I'm looking for towns to volunteer host in March. We're going to process the state conference and election products and services because there's some changes happening with elections. In April, the Obamacare AHC, whatever it's called, insurance on what kind of records and reporting. So we've got an insurance person coming. May, we don't meet because it's Memorial Day. June, asset management. How are we managing the tools, equipment, buildings, and facilities that we have? Do we have replacement plans in place? What do we need to keep in mind? So that we are looking at the roof going, okay, it's good for two more years, instead of waiting until it starts dripping and go, oh, how are we going to pay for that? Then in July, we will have new people running for House of Representatives in Lansing and for the Senate seat. So we thought we'd invite the candidates that are running before the primary in August so that we can get to meet them and ask them questions.
Commissioners are running again.
Oh, okay, and the commissioners, so we can get them in too. All right. So we're thinking July 28th, whether we should do that as a picnic, because in the past we have done picnic potlucks and stuff, looking for input. August, met some people at conference from the DEQ that would like to talk about oil, gas, and minerals, and how that all works, and what are the things. I looked at their map, and it's like, do you know we have gold mines in Michigan? The UP has gold mines. And I've heard a story that somebody's got a painting set up out on the Jordan River and they do find gold every year. I heard that story. I personally haven't seen it, but I talked to somebody who had, and they said they are panning for gold and they're finding it every summer. But minerals, like, we have the possible coal in Michigan. We have the big salt mines in Detroit, a lot of people don't know. So they said they'd be happy to come up and talk about that. By September, we should know whether they're getting the petitions for the personal property tax proposal that they want to put on the ballot in November. So I thought we'd get somebody in to talk about that. October, we'll bring somebody up from MTA. In November, parks, parklands, and recreation. So if anybody has ideas or wants to volunteer to host one of these, please see me later. All right, so fill out your evaluation. And any other things in general, questions you want to ask of people if you're going, hey, we're trying to deal with this, anybody got a solution? Anybody got things like that? If not, please fill out the exit survey. Take your goodies home, you know, they're little squeezy guys so hurt for when we get calls and stuff. We can do that. Yeah, no reason for it. Well, summary, You volunteered to be a leader, and many of you probably ran unopposed when you ran for the position. Some of you have been in service for a long time, but think about who inspired you to be a leader. Think about who are you inspiring, because we sure need to recruit young people and get them involved. So, you think, how do you get those people in the door? How do you get them involved? And we got to get our replacements straight. Ron, so I thank everybody for coming to town.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Have a good day, your mom. Hey, 10-minute saver on time.
To the best of all the organizations with the forum.
All right.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn. Second, in favor? Aye.
Aye.